Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go, Draft Knicks. Here we go. Welcome to another edition of Draft Nation. My name is Joe412, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. For those of you that have not been an avid listener or a regular listener to our show, welcome. We'd like to have you back. And we want to thank our sponsor tonight, iHeartMedia, where you can find all your favorite music, radio, and podcasts all for free. And as I said, for those of you that don't listen to our show, Draft Nation is a national e-magazine that focuses and hyper-focuses on all four major sports and their professional drafts. We cover all aspects of things like player scouting, which is very important this time of year for the NFL. Mock drafts was even more important and a lot more fun for you draft knicks out there. Free agency, which we're going to get into a lot tonight. Some of the salary cap provisions of your favorite teams and, of course, your favorite team's needs in those drafts. And tonight, we have two very special guests, Dr. Steve Mancini and Claudio Relzano. And Claudio, Steve, welcome to Draft Nation. Are you guys ready to go on the clock?
Ready to go. Thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
Sure. So first, I'll start with you, Steve. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your background in hockey.
Sure. First of all, Joe, thanks again for having us on the show. And Claudio, I feel like I haven't talked to you in, I don't know, it's been not too many hours. But it's been a while. But anyways, yeah, I've been involved in hockey as far as coaching, playing for decades. I've coached at the junior level, travel level, high school level, played tournaments, international tournaments. I've just been in hockey forever. And obviously I've had the pleasure of writing a few articles on Draft 412. So, I'm just kind of staying up to speed and just enjoying watching at this point in my stage. Because I tell you what, I am done coaching, and I think I like it better sitting on the sidelines.
We'll get into your favorite team, the Penguins, here in a little bit too. I think you played a Nostradamus role when we talked to you back in October on the Draft 412 podcast. But Claudio, tell everybody a little bit about you too, and where they might be able to find you.
All right. Well, this is my 41st year in baseball. 19 years as head coach at Carnegie Mellon University. This is my 23rd year as a general manager and professional baseball scout with the Global Scouting Bureau. I host a podcast, the Claudio Relzano Show, where I interview a lot of sports legends, and Steve and I do Italian Impact Weekly here in Pittsburgh. It's a great show. We've had a lot of great guests on. I wrote a book, Lead from the Heart Up, Not the Neck Up, How to Create a Positive Winning Culture and Field in the Office. I host a TV boxing show. I've hosted a podcast, a basketball podcast, and I do a bunch of stuff. And also I do some stuff with Draft Nation, obviously, baseball-wise, and looking forward to doing more things there. And I do a lot of baseball training, some speaking. I do all kinds of stuff, part-time heart surgeon. I do all kinds of things.
Your schedule's not too packed full. That's okay. So, well, guys, welcome to Draft Nation. We're going to get into it. I know you guys are both Pittsburgh-based, so we're going to talk a lot about Pittsburgh sports tonight. And I'd like to open it up with the Pirates because we opened up spring training not too long ago, and I know, Claudio, that you've got to be ramping up for that. So why don't I start with you? I'll throw my first Pirate question at you, and I ask this a lot, but I can never get tired of asking it. The best player, in my opinion, in the Pirates organization is Paul Skenes, their pitcher. They drafted him number one overall last year. Amazing stuff. He played sparingly last year in the minors for the teams and for the farm system. Bumped his way up as he went. In some games, he only threw 10 pitches, but it was enough to get him some level of experience. But if you were to tell me that is he ready to play in the majors? My answer is yes, because he's better than all the Pirates pitchers there are in the majors. And I would find it hard for anybody to tell me that's not the case. But this week we saw the Pirates, basically reassign him to the minors. Are they doing the right thing? Should he be the ace and start the first game of the season in PNC Park? Or is this something where you play a little contract game roulette with him where you're not bringing him up till July or even September? What are your thoughts on Skenes, and what would you do if you were Pirate management?
I would have brought him up last fall, get him acclimated to Major League Baseball, the traveling, the fans, the stadiums, the ball, the opponents, everything. Get his feet wet. This way he hits the ground running in 2024. And they obviously didn't do that. I would not maybe necessarily make him their number one pitcher for opening day, but without question their number two. There is no question I would have brought him up, as I said, very simple, and I knew it wasn't going to happen. They want to baby him. Hey, I'm 59. They brought up Bruce Kieson after 11-1 Triple A Charleston back in 71, and he was a huge cog of them winning the World Series in 71. What are you holding him back for? Is it, are you worried about him mentally getting hit? Are you worried about him getting hurt? Or all these pitch counts and all that ridiculous stuff? It makes zero sense. And then they say, well, we get to control his contract for X amount of years. Look, you buy a Ferrari, use it. What's the sense of keeping it in the garage? Okay. If you are serious about winning, then they should have brought him up. This is why, in my opinion, you know, Clint Hurdle had a great saying, you are who your baseball card says you are. Who you are is who you are. The Pirates are who they are. And look, I grew up in a great era of baseball where every year, just in the 70s, they had some expert thought they would win the World Series. And every year in August or September, they would bring in somebody to maybe be a piece to get them over the top. All right. These guys don't even get out of the gate with somebody to put them over the top. Like I said, since we're talking about schemes, if you have, I'm sure we'll get into this, Keller, Skeens, I know everybody hates Trevor Bauer. He was found innocent. He went through the process. I don't know all the details. Hey, I have a daughter. I don't disrespect anybody, male or female, but whatever the hell happened, I don't know. But obviously he was found innocent. He's allowed to play in the majors. He'd play for minimum. If you have Keller, Skeens, and Bauer, and then you can, in my opinion, Priester, if they make him turn him into a Frank Tanana type pitcher, we can get to that later if you'd like. Now you have a shot for the playoffs because baseball is not, in my opinion, it's mediocre. If you say that the Dodgers or the Yankees are the best team in Major League Baseball, that's like saying I'm the tallest one in my family. Okay, I'm 5'6", 5'6" and a half on a good hair day. Okay, the Pirates, if they would have had those three starters, including Skeens, they'd make a hell of a run, in my opinion. But again, to put in the capsule, they should have brought up Skeens in the fall, get him acclimated, let him know what he had to work on upcoming spring, what he was good at, and then it would build up a huge excitement with the fans. Even if they didn't bring him up in the fall, you know, in the late year last year, bring him up this year, the fans would have, they're already going to pound opening day, obviously. The second day, to have him come, he'd be an attraction. I think he would do well, but they didn't do it. And if they bring him up in June or July, by that time, they could be out of the damn playoff race. They could be, they're not going to get off to a start like they did last year, at least I doubt it. It makes no sense.
Yeah, last year's start was ridiculous. You know, what was it, the 20-9 or whatever it was. And it was, you know, and then they had that just horrific fall. You know, did they do it? Let me ask you this before I rotate over to Steve, talk a little hockey. I'll ask another baseball question here. Did they do enough in the offseason to be that competitive, right? They're a team on the rise. There's no doubt that their minors are chock full. They've got talent there. You know, and some of it's a year or two or maybe longer away. You know, they're not going to see, we're not going to see Tamar Johnson. We're not going to see some of these guys that, you know, but, you know, with the moves that they made in the offseason to bolster the major league team and a few of the tweaks, the dials up and downs that they can with minor league talent, do they have enough in the central to be competitive? I mean, is this a season where, you know, we're going to go past we're going to be a buyer at the trading deadline, or are we going to be the, you know, the typical Pirate selling at the trading deadline?
They won't be a buyer. Did they do enough to make noise in the division? They did what they did, but the other teams seem to have done a little bit more. So it's almost like they're at a standstill. I mean, what did they do? What did they really do? Now, if they bring up Skeens, now we're doing something. If they get a Trevor Bauer, now we're doing something, okay? But they pretty much, let's say they improved, just let's say numbers 1 to 10. Let's say they improved to a 5. The Reds are going to be better. The Cardinals are certainly not going to be the team they were last year. They're going to be better.
That was just crazy to think the Cardinals had the season that they had. That's just not
exactly.
St. Louis baseball.
So There you go. That was not St. Louis. That was just a bad, you know, it happens. I think, you know, a lot of experts, and I put that in quotes, are saying the Pirates most likely are going to finish last. Now, having said all of that, and I'm not being hypocritical or riding the fence, baseball is so mediocre, opinion, that anything can happen. But baseball is a marathon, not a sprint, okay? So, again, a weaker team in football can somehow sneak in. A weaker a team in the NCAA is coming up, March Madness. Something crazy can happen. Baseball, the Pirates got off to a fantastic start. Everybody went crazy. Then they started to see who they really were. I personally don't think they did enough. Now you say the first baseman they picked up, Rowdy Tellez. A couple years ago, he was big time. He's dropped off. But here's the other thing, too, and I'll end it with this. You mentioned some minor league players and even some of the guys they have now. I've said this numerous times. If you are not going to be, if you're not, okay, a buyer in this case, but if you're not going to buy a new car, clean up and fix up the one that you have. Who have they made better? Who have they made better? Like Cruz is a stud and a half. I think Brian Hayes could be better. Who are they improving? Who are they developing? Has Keller gotten much better? Priester, I mentioned Frank Tanana. Frank Tanana was a fireball pitcher until he got hurt. Then he became a pitcher, location, changing speeds. Priester apparently isn't throwing as hard as he used to. Make him a pitcher. Develop a breaking ball. These are terrific athletes. These are crazy athletes. They were blessed with a ton of ability. So now you need a coach to make them better, improve them. Make him a pitcher, hit his spots, more breaking balls, be a smarter pitcher, you know, and things maybe can happen. So, again, I'll say the line. If you're not going to go out and get big-name free agents, okay, then fix up what you have. Are they going to do it? Have they done it? That can be answered. I don't have to answer that.
Yeah. Well, let me rotate off of you for a second. Let's go from a team that's on the rise to a team that's clearly on the decline. And, Steve, I know that you've been watching the Penguins. We talked preseason. We talked, you know, during the summer when they made the move for Erik Karlsson, and it was like trying to get the band back together one last time to make a run. And here we are at the trading deadline, and the Penguins are selling Jake Guentzel, moving pieces away. Was this team the team that you expected to see this year? Were you disappointed? Were you you know, apathetic because we kind of knew that we were going to get this 500 level team or worse. And what do you see them do? What's their game plan in the off season? They've got the bump with the salary cap. They traded away Guentzel, you know, and he's obviously a UFA, you know, but how is there something they can do to make this team competitive next year? And what is that if there is something?
So there is a lot in there. And as I kindly watch said game right now, here's what it comes down to. The bottom line is, I love your phrase, get the band back together. I like Mike Sullivan as a coach. I'm going to start there. He is still trying to do things the way he did 8 years ago, and he just doesn't have the roster for it. And I'm going to give a couple of pieces here. You know, the only one of what I'll call, to your point, the old band that's really – still playing it at what I'm going to call an elite level, as much as, you know, people don't want to admit this, it is Crosby. I mean, if I were king for a day, I would tell you there is almost no one on this roster not named Crosby that I would think about keeping next year. I knew it coming into the year, and I said it in the article I wrote on Draft 412. I said they're different, but they're not better. In fact, they actually got older with some of these moves. They kept some people around, and I get it. Contracts, you can't necessarily get rid of some of the older players. I get it. You know, you're stuck with them. But, you know, the simple fact is, until they can get rid of some of the old players, and I know a lot of people are going to think this is blasphemy, but I think Malkin is an absolute liability on this team right now. And I talked about that in the article. How many times does he take penalties? And he did it tonight, and they gave away the go-ahead goal because he's in the bind. He keeps doing this. He's one of their leading penalty minutes guys. You can't have an elite player who's supposed to be putting the puck in the back of the net in the penalty box. You just can't do it. Letang's another one. at least Letang's a defenseman. You say, well, maybe he's playing physical. He gets penalties. Maybe. But he still does his standard turn puck over and, you know, cost team, you know, odd man rush on power play, shorthanded give, still does it. And the problem is he doesn't have the speed to recover. So their band is just slow. And until they blow that up and get rid of those, they're not going anywhere for years. I hope in the off season that they get rid of, and I'm going to be very blunt, and I know this is people say, it's age discrimination. They need to think about anybody over age 30. They need to really evaluate their contracts because you have got to make this team younger. Because if you're going to keep Mike Sullivan as your coach who wants to play a speed game, then you've got to have a speedy team. You can't have a bunch of 35, 36, 37-year-old guys, even older on the roster. I mean, you got Jeff Carter in there. I think Malkin's 38. You can't. These are not the guys to play to this system. So either you find a system that's catering to a bunch of guys in their 30s, or you get rid of these guys and bring in a bunch of young guys. And until they're willing to do that, they're going to be this mediocre 500 because they still have what I'll call intermittent talent. And here's the worst part about this roster. Defensively, they're still one of the best teams in the league. They don't give up goals in droves. Well, they've gotten blown out a few times this year, and that's a little uncharacteristic. But defensively speaking, they're not bad. They just can't score. And they can't score because they don't have guys that can put the puck in the net. They don't have guys that can do the hard press, hard forecheck. And unless I'm missing something, I do not see anything in the minors that makes me go, oh, don't worry, when this guy comes up, it's going to be different. Like, I'm not seeing that. They've got a couple of decent guys down there, sure. But I'm not seeing anything in the system that really tells me, oh, yeah, this team is going to turn around. Now, I'll say one player that I think is under is I hope they keep, and I think he is undervalued, and I think it's Drew O'Connor. I think he has the potential to be an elite winger in this league. But, you know, again, when you don't have two or three lines, when you don't have that depth, he's not going to get matched up with guys against similar skill set. So he's not going to put up big numbers because the Penguins can only really rule out one good line. And Gensel used to be on that line, and now he's gone. But I'm going to tell you, I don't know if you're going to ask this question, but if you're going to ask it, I'm going to answer it. I'm glad they got rid of Gensel. He was 30 years old, and you don't want to run into the same situation you're in now with a bunch of mid-30-something-year-old guys, and you're stuck with an $8 million, $10 million a year contract, and now you can't get rid of them, and they can't score 40 goals a year. I think when a guy's 30, 31, if he's not willing to eat a little bit on the salary, you have to get what you can get for them and think about the future because it's just simply not worth paying someone like that outrageous money when you know in 2 years, 3 years, he's going to miss a step. And Jake Gensel's not a big guy. And I always look at him and I always think, in my opinion, is I see him as one good hit from being knocked out for the season. He's just not a big guy. And he's already been hurt a few times. So, you know, this team has to just blow it up. They need to get some youth. They need to get rid of a lot of these older guys, not because they're old, but because they just don't have the speed to play in the system they want to play in. I still think Crosby's one of their elite players, and if I could have him till the day he retired, I'd keep him. Otherwise, with the exception of maybe him, O'Connor, maybe Patterson, you know, there's not a lot on that roster that I wouldn't be willing to give up in the offseason to make this team better.
Well, you mentioned a few things I want to follow up on. I mean, obviously, the Gensel trade, in my opinion, was underwhelming. I think they waited too long. They played too many games. Yeah. And they didn't get enough in return. Now, they did restock the minors. A lot of these guys are lottery tickets, and we don't know what they're going to be. None of them are game – and the conditional pick was just ridiculous. It's basically a throwaway because even if they win the cup, it's – you're getting the last pick in the draft or the first round, but I'm not sure what they got for him. But you know, I don't know if you share that opinion. Secondly, did they miss an opportunity to clean house? I mean, they have guys that cherry pick and they could have gotten something for the Raquels of the world, the Jaris of the world, the Graveses of the world. Even though I like Adam Graves or Pettersson. Like, Pettersson's stock would never have been any higher than it was. You know, there were guys that people would have traded for, and yet we made, you know, a couple of minor moves, and the Gensel move, you know, at the very last moment because they lost to the Caps 6-0. and you know, Dubas had to do that. I mean, I liked what he's done. I liked what Dubas did last summer. I liked what he did, you know, as best he could, you know, with moving some dead weight. I liked the Erik Karlsson gamble. I still like the Erik Karlsson move. It just didn't pay off the way that everybody hoped it would pay off this year because the team just, like you said, it didn't have any secondary scoring. So if you weren't on that first line and some days on the second line, you weren't scoring, right? It just, the team just didn't have it this year. And you're right about Gensel. I mean, he's an injury-prone guy. He's been out. They traded him basically the moment he stepped off of long-term IR. You know, he was on the shelf for an extended period. And you're right, he's 30. You know, he's not going to get any better. And even though he's a 40-goal guy with Crosby, I don't know if he'll be a 40-goal guy somewhere else. We've never played with anybody else. Now, I trust Jake's talent, and I know he's going to be a star wherever he goes, but is he going to be the star he was along Crosby's line? You know, and I think there may even be some rules with them retaining some salary on him that prevents them from trying to re-sign him in the off season, which I think is interesting for those fans that might be interested in seeing him make a return from his unrestricted free agency to kind of finish his career with Crosby. But you mentioned Crosby by name, and you're right, but he's also a free agent at the end of next season. I mean, what do you do? What is the Penguins' plan to turn this around, Steve?
So a couple of things that you chimed on. I do agree with you. I don't think the Gensel trade was like, whoa, they got a lot back. You're absolutely right there, and I think people missed that. He literally just came off the injury. In fact, I was surprised he was playing so quickly after he went to Carolina, because I think he missed a game or two before he was actually able to play. I don't think he played as soon as he got to Carolina, because he was off injured, but he was still not 100%. I also don't think, and all you got to do is look at the stats, I don't think he's as good as he is without a guy like Crosby on his line, because I don't think he is good enough to carry a line. I think he is a phenomenal finisher. I think you put the puck on his stick around that goal, he's going to do a decent job most times of getting that puck in the back of the net. I do think he is very good at that. I just don't think he is that one guy like a Crosby that can carry a line or even a team. So I won't be surprised to see that without Crosby, he's not a 20, maybe 25 goal scorer a season. I'll be really curious to see his statistics. As far as Crosby, what is he doing? At this point of his career, I mean, that's kind of his decision. If I'm the team, it's all about what are you trying to do. And by the way, let's roll back the trade deadline, because you said there were definitely a few players they could have gotten a lot more for. Patterson's a good example. I would have even thrown Brian Rust in that mix. I would have thrown Rickard Rakell in there as saying, okay, these guys will be available, but I'm going to see what you're going to give me back. The problem is, do the Penguins still believe they can make the playoffs? And if they think they can make the playoffs, do they honestly believe they're going to go deep with this roster? And if you're not going deep with this roster now, or even making the playoffs, assuming you even make them, and you didn't make the playoffs last year with essentially a lot of the core pieces of this roster, why are you keeping them? It just doesn't make any sense. If this roster can't win, then why not mix it up? Like I said, I think there's about three guys on this roster that I really not want to lose. Otherwise, I think everybody should be on the table in the offseason. Now, will he do that? I don't know. But I'll tell you one thing, though, I also agree with you on. I don't know if I necessarily like the moves, but I like what he's trying to do. I think he is hamstrung. I think he can't move certain pieces. I think there's no way they're going to let him get rid of a Letang, a Malkin, certain guys. They're just not going to let him get rid of it. Everybody kind of knew, you know, Gensel was on the fence and he was probably going to get traded. So there was no surprise there. But I think your other big pieces, yeah, I think there's no way he could have gotten rid of them. But you know what? We're going to find out in the offseason, because if they all come back, then what that tells me is this team is, number one, delusional. And number two, it's simply about keeping a bunch of buddies together to play hockey, and it's certainly not about, you know, building a winning organization that's going to compete anytime soon until these guys leave, because they don't have it anymore to compete with this roster. They just don't have it. So I do think they missed some opportunities in the offseason, but that all depends on, number one, did he throw those pieces out and maybe nobody bid on it, or is there this delusion that, no, we just need to tweak a few things so we can get in the playoffs, because if that's the case – then they're in real trouble. But if it was just a question of, you know, nobody bit, maybe he did throw more things out there, well, that's something different. So,
Well, you know, Claudio, let me come back to you. Let's go back to baseball for a second, because I've been sitting here in the back of my head as I was engaging with, you know, with Steve talking hockey. You mentioned something just it skipped like a rock on the pond, but I want to talk about it. I mean, you said that baseball is mediocre. You used that word, and I'm curious as to why you think it's mediocre, and maybe compare it to, you know, because you kept, you know, going back to guys that you were alluding to in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And I'm wondering if there's, you know, take me through your logic on the mediocrity of the game, why you think it's the case. Is it simply, you know, over analytics, you know, like they have, or is it, you know, the way that they're treating the pitchers, or the way that they're treating something? Where's your head? What's the philosophy behind your comparison to baseball being mediocre these days?
What you just said, I mean, the velo exit. I think it was De La Cruz last year, or somebody hit 119 mile an hour shot to center field, but he was 0-for-4. Or maybe it was O'Neill Cruz. But yes, I don't like the way the pitchers come out in fourth, fifth inning. And then if that's the, like La Russa and Joe, La Russa had to do that in the 90s. He had older starting pitching, but then he had Gene Nelson and Rick Honeycutt to do the job, to bring to the closer a guy by the name of Eckersley. But then everybody said, let's copycat. Meanwhile, they didn't have, like now, they copycat. They don't have the ability to do that. But back to your question, mediocrity. There's more strikeouts in the game today than there are hits. Think about that. There's more strikeouts than there are hits. Is it because the pitchers are so great and they're throwing 190 miles an hour? No. It's because, just watch. Don't. I'm not giving you an opinion, okay? These are facts. Watch. Every swing, uppercut, uppercut, uppercut. When you uppercut, okay, what do all uppercutters have in common? Yes, they'll hit home runs, they'll hit more fly balls, and they'll strike out more because you're off of the plane of the ball quicker, all right? Back when I was sound like an old man, that's terrific. They say old school. No, it was better school. Not old school, better school. The Gwynns of the world, the George Bretts, he hit home runs. Dave Parker, he hit home runs. All those guys hit home runs, but Stargell, they all had nice averages. Yes, Stargell at one point was struck out more than anybody in the history of the game. But now it's all pop-ups and home runs. That's what it is. Then you hear all this craziness, and I'm telling your audience right now, whenever you hear an announcer or even a baseball player say to hit the lower half of the ball to create backspin, I don't give a damn. I've hit 6 zillion fungo balls. I cannot throw a ball to myself and hit the lower half of the ball to create backspin. Okay? It's hard enough to hit the ball, let alone the lower half of it. And then how about if it's a low pitch? How the hell are you going to hit the lower half of it? Okay? But without going into a hitting lesson, number one, the hitting is brutal. Forget about the Hall of Fame pitchers that I grew up watching, the Fergie Jenkins, the Jim Palmers, the Tom Seavers, the Steve Carltons, those guys, or even Greg Maddux later on, those guys would have just been ridiculously, they were great back then, but they would have been, Bob Gibson, I can go on and on, they would have been unbelievable. Go to the second tier pitchers, and that's no knock on them. Go to the Rookers and the Royce and the Roden or the Andahars or the Teons, you know, that. Steve Rogers, Steve, those guys would have, I just mentioned Steve and Rogers, Dave, Steve, and Steve Rogers. They would have just destroyed these hitters today because every pitch they threw had movement, they changed speeds in a big way, and they could place them, but they had command of X amount of pitches. And they would have just dominated. Okay, now, again, let's say, Joe, you call me to go play golf. Let's say you're bad at golf and I'm bad at golf. One of us has to win. Even if we shoot 150, okay, one of us has to shoot 149. You know what I'm trying to say?
Well, that would be me. I'd be 150.
That's all right. That's okay. But again, it's just it's taught poorly. Okay, and then you say, well, Claudia, who are you to say it? Well, I know who I am, and I know what I teach, and I know these guys are unbelievable athletes. Cole Tucker just got released again. If somebody would have worked with that kid, three different organizations, they never did anything with him. God knows why. I don't know what the hell they told him. Okay, Pedro Alvarez, I know what he was told, and obviously it didn't work, but that's another story. But, again, it is mediocre. And then the pitchers today, why is it that they're pitching less innings, but they're all getting hurt? Oh, that's because they're throwing hard. When we were younger, what did they tell you? Don't start throwing a curveball until you're a little bit older. The guys that we grew up watching threw a lot of curveballs, a lot of torque on that arm, and they lasted forever. James Rodney Richard, well, he got hurt in a different way, but Nolan Ryan, he threw hard. Sudden Sam McDowell, he threw hard. Roger Clemens, he threw hard. Okay, they didn't have Tom Seaver, he threw hard. Jim Palmer, he threw hard. Okay, we can go on. And the guys that we grew up watching, they threw in the mid-90s too. They say Chapman. Chapman has good mechanics. This is why he's a reliever. He doesn't pitch many innings. But again, you tell me yes, there's some studs. I think De La Cruz can be a stud. I think Cruz for the Pirates can be unbelievable. But again, as a whole, the San Diego Padres of the 70s were better than some of these division leaders right now. And then, like I said, you know, a few years ago when Snell was taken out of the game for Tampa, when he was doing well against the Dodgers, I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it. What, 75 pitches? He's got to come out. Why? He's doing well. This is the World Series. It makes no sense to me. Or back to Skeens. Again, he's a young kid. He's fine. He's going to be fine. What are you going to do when he comes up here? You're going to pay him $1 zillion and just, you know, monitor his pitches. He can't pitch. Oh, my God. He's 75 pitches. He's got to come out. Come on. You know, get their arms in shape. Like when I was a kid, those guys used to do long toss, and they would run a lot. I don't see that anymore. All I see is weightlifting. C.C. Sabathia once said he didn't have any injuries until he had muscle, because before he didn't have any muscle to injure, okay, with the lifting, and they look terrific. But, again, is it an opinion or is it a fact? Do you enjoy why – I watched the Mets-Yankees from Florida. The first two innings were strikeout, pop-up, strikeout, pop-up. And I'm talking about bad pitches. Now, I watched something today, Rod Scurry, who was an unbelievable – he had an unbelievable curveball. And he was – and it looked like a strike. Then all of a sudden, it wasn't a strike. It was not a strike. And these guys were swinging. A lot of the pitches that are swing and miss today, they didn't even start off as a strike. So – again, I don't see how anybody could say that it's not mediocre. Yes, they look better. Look, I scout professionally. I can name you a lot of arms. Dave Parker, Alex Valentine, Mondesi, Dwight Evans, Cromartie, of course, Clemente, Stargell in his day, you know, Fred Lynn. Those guys had big arms. Now, I don't know of any cannons in the outfield. One time I was doing a live show, and there was a guy who said that Andrew McCutchen was a five-tool player, and this was in his prime. And I said, no, he's not. He's got some power. Yes, he can run. Third fastest I ever seen go from home to third. He couldn't steal a base. That's another story. He could hit for an average, but he didn't have an arm. But then we were going back and forth. But then during the show, I cut him off. I said, you know what? I apologize. You're right. He is a five-tool player today. His arm, compared to everybody else, was okay, you know, regular, you know, average arm. But if I was comparing him to the guys that I grew up watching. Whenever I do a scouting report, we do a 20 to 80 Major League Baseball rating scale. I've had to lower my standards. It's almost like a guy who's been divorced seven times, the eighth wife. Well, hell, he's got to maybe bend a little bit. I've had to bend a little bit. I know these guys don't have a Clemente arm or a Mondesi arm. Or that was the kid for the Pirates. I forgot his name. Right, he had a cannon. Guillen, he had an arm. You know, so I had to kind of tone it down a little bit. I don't see how anybody could say that it's not a big pool of mediocrity. Now, for example, look at the teams that didn't, the Pirates were one of the top teams and organizations in Major League Baseball in the 70s. They won two World Series. The Expos were tough. The Phillies were damn tough. You know, there was the Dodgers were good. Cincinnati was good. There was a lot of teams that were just that much better. Maybe if there was a wild card, they would have gotten in, and they would have won, in my opinion, a few more World Series. But you tell me, did you enjoy watching the strikeout pop up? And then they want to speed the game up. Well, there's seven pitchers. Go take Bob Gibson out of a game or Jim Rooker out of a game or any of those guys out of a game. It's the analytics, the way they baby everything. Now, if a guy's hurt, take him out. If he's getting hit hard, take him out. And like I said, all they do is throw as hard as they can. And tell me some pitchers. I named some guys. When Ken Delaria threw his no-hitter in 76, it's on YouTube. Watch that game. Watch the movement he had. Okay, Doug Rao, his opposing pitcher for the Dodgers, another lefty. Up, down, change speeds. 1 minute it was a 92-mile-an-hour fastball. It was a 76-mile-an-hour changeup. Now the sliders are 100. The fastball is 102. It's hard to watch. When you know how the soup should be cooked and you see it's not being cooked that way, it's hard to watch. And then the announcers on top of that. Spin, let the ball travel deep. Hit inside the ball. Oh, my God. It's ridiculous. And all
so Steve,
of that.
Let me ask you a similar question because I think Claudio brings up something that I want you to translate for our listeners to hockey. There was the fire wagon hockey of the 70s and 80s, and then there was the Mark Tan Brodeur trap and hook and hockey of the 90s, and now after the most recent iteration, I mean, you've got the three-man overtime, you've got the shootout, you've got basically a game that's been designed to score more and speed up more, and you see pads, were inflated and now they've gone back down. You've seen equipment be legalized that hadn't been legalized. The Jaromir Jagr sticks, where they would call a penalty on him in the third period and things like that. Claudio's point about baseball, is it translatable to hockey too? Are we seeing hockey's best product right now?
So I'm going to make one comment on something Claudio said because he absolutely nailed it. Claudio, when I was a kid, I was taught, don't try and kill the ball, just make contact. And I don't think they teach that anymore. And I think that's what, to your point, they're aiming for home run ball. And I'm going to tell you, Joe, why that does translate to hockey. Two big things, and I think this is applicable to all sports. Number one, they've overexpanded sports, and now you really have a lot of players that if you had, say, I mean, obviously, if you had 16 teams over 32, a lot of these guys are simply not good enough to play in a smaller league. So I think you dilute the talent, number one. And I think that does apply to hockey, which is why you have some very bad teams, where the number one and number two lines probably should be in the minors, but they're good enough in that team or in that system that's my NHL guys. Now, Claudio mentioned analytics. I think it's another thing that's killing sports in general, and yes, it applies to hockey. Hockey's still a little more pure. Either, you put the puck in the back of the net, or you don't. You either assist or you don't. You either keep it out of the net or you don't. And at the end of the day, you can play all those numbers, but that's not going to matter. And I mean, Jake Gensel's a perfect example. He puts up 40 goals, year after year. I want him. He's going to put 40 goals. Even if he doesn't put 40, even if he doesn't play as well, he's going to give me 25, 30. You know what you're getting. You don't care necessarily about the analytics per se. But there are a lot of things. Well, how fast is the puck traveling? You see that number. You see who's the fastest skater, which kind of matters, except how often, believe it or not, I watch a ton of hockey. It's not that often that you're just racing down the ice by yourself with someone chasing you. They call that a breakaway, and that's usually because a defensive breakdown. So those things are nice, but, there's different factors, that determine whether you're going to be good. Yes, you want to be fast. But depending on the system you're in, now kind of going back to your question, things have changed. What they want now is goals, period. That's why you went to 3-on-3. It's more exciting. It is fun. It opens the ice up. the speed matters, but more again, they're all very good. They can all pass the puck, and it's all looking for some kind of systematic breakdown. In other words, we get a two-on-one, or we catch them in a line change or something, and then we get the advantage, and we put the puck in the back of the net. Very rarely are you going to score with actually three guys in the zone and three guys, you know, attacking. So you look for breakdowns in the system. Going back in time, and I remember this book like I read it yesterday. It was in the 80s. I can't remember what the book was called, but it was. They were talking about all these old-time guys, and they were talking about how, you know, when they used to show up for camp, they said they would literally play themselves into shape. And these are guys that would be smoking, drinking, and they'd show up to camp, and they're out of shape. And then they used the camp to kind of get in shape, and then, you know, a few games into the season, and they were back at, you know, at, what quote, you know, their top game. Nowadays, these guys train year-round, and I think that to the point of why there's a lot of injuries, I think they overtrain because their muscles don't ever relax, to Claudio's point on baseball. You know, guys threw in the 90s 30, 40 years ago. It's not like that's a new thing. So it's not like everybody's throwing 101 miles an hour because we're somehow training better. It's not like all of a sudden now we can throw curveballs. Well, it's the same thing in hockey. But, yeah, the game was a little slower. Things like technology have actually improved hockey. And I'll give you a couple of good examples. And Joe, maybe you remember this. Remember these things called wood sticks? Long time ago, we used to play with wood sticks. Now they've lightened the stick. Well, what's the advantage of that? Well, it gives you, you know, you can swing it faster. If I can swing it faster, I can hit the puck, I can drive it faster. You know, you mentioned the curves on the stick. You know, they're letting these guys get away with it. Why? Because they want goals at the end of the day. You know, guys always curve their stick, and they did whatever they could do to get away with it. I'm sure you remember, some of our listeners probably remember the old days of taking a blowtorch to your hockey blade, heating it up so you could bend it, you know, and get a nice funky curve that's probably not meant to be there. So technology has certainly changed hockey. Like you said, they had the big pads and they said, no, because, you know, you're making too many saves. So they shrunk the size of the pads. However, these guys are throwing 90-100 mile an hour slap shots at them, so you want them to be safe. So, you know, technology is – hockey is one of those sports where technology did change it, unlike, say, basketball or even baseball. That, you know, they tighten – they wind the balls a little tighter, get more home runs out of it. But hockey, that puck is the same puck they've been playing with, but the skates are lighter. The sticks are lighter. The pads are lighter. You know, the training, the regimen that they're going in, they're stronger. So now a stronger guy is swinging a lighter, giving them faster shots. You know, they train with professional skaters almost year-round. So they're constantly, their strides are perfect. You know, their edge work is perfect, forwards, backwards, everything is perfect. So I think the game's gotten better. But at the same time, they're lucky they're not, the only thing that analytics are seem to be coming into is the gambling. Which, again, which played into, you know, that's a whole other topic that maybe you want to get into, we don't want to get into. But what's changed in the sport is the fact that, look, they've overexpanded it. So I don't think you have as talented a guys in some of these teams that should even be in the NHL. And I do think the change in technology and the fact that the league has put rules in place that they call penalties on certain things that not used to be penalties because they want these guys to score more goals because it is exciting. Those are the big things I see over hockey over the last few decades. And, you know, another big one, and this is a big touchy subject, and you probably remember the old days too, we're fighting in enforcement. You know, they want to get rid of that, and they've really lowered it in the league. Well, the problem is, I remember a couple of years ago, and it was at least a couple of years ago, when the Penguins were in the playoffs, and they were playing the Rangers. And defensively, they were playing well, and they were keeping the scores low, and they were going to beat the Rangers. And Crosby takes a shot to the head. I don't even think there was a penalty called, okay? And instead of, you know, quote, the enforcers.
There wasn't a suspension afterwards when Jacob Trouba hit him, and it was ridiculous.
Yeah, that's it. And so you know, 20 years ago, oh, that would have been a bench-clearing brawl, or he would have already known you don't go after the captain with a headshot because you're going to pay for it. But now the way it's done is they're relying on the refs, which is bad because the refs are so inconsistent. And even if they don't rely on the refs, again, I watch these fights. They're more clutching. You're very lucky if you see a couple of punches thrown. No, I'm not a violent man. But in hockey, there is a place for that. It keeps people from putting an elbow to your star player's head. Because even if they get punished, what is it? 2, 3, 4 game suspension? Yeah, but you knocked out their star player for the playoffs. And in that case, I do believe that is why the Penguins lost that series.
Well, guys, we're at the tail end of our segment here, and I'm going to switch to something which is everybody's favorite here in the city. It's the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I'm going to ask you each to take a little bit of time to comment on some of the things that they've done over the last few weeks. We've seen an entire sea change. Mitch Trubisky gone. Mason Rudolph gone to Denver, to Tennessee. Kenny Pickett, their first-round draft pick, hometown hero, two years ago, off to Philadelphia. They bring in Russell Wilson, surprise everybody by going out and getting Justin Fields. And you want to talk about a wholesale change? I don't think I've seen anything like it. But they also go out and break the bank a bit and get Patrick Queen, the big splash inside linebacker that we've been wanting here for a long time. They've missed in the draft. They've missed in free agency. Some of it is through, injuries. I mean, Devin Bush's knee injury and then Cole Holcomb's knee injury, Quan Alexander's Achilles last year. They had guys that were doing better. It's been a weak spot in this defense for a while. They went out and land Patrick Queen. They move a cancer out of the locker room in Deontay Johnson. They bring back a corner who's coming off an injury but had been playing sufficiently and serviceably up until that point, and they still have some money to play with. And now there's rumors out there about Justin Jefferson in a trade or Mike Williams or a Tyler Boyd signing to add another weapon to Russell Wilson's offense as we look at this. And they still have, four picks through day two. They added that third round with the Pickett trade to Philly. So now they've got a first, a second, and two thirds. I'll start with you, Claudio. Have the Steelers had, and I realize it's incomplete, we're not there yet, they just went through the first wave of free agency and the draft hasn't happened, but have they had a successful offseason to date?
Real quick, Steve made a ton of great points, and I got to say one more thing. Dale Barra, whenever he was hitting .268, 15 home runs and 68 RBIs, everybody wanted to run him out of town. Nowadays, that's pretty damn good. I went to a game one time, Yankees-Pirates, the batting averages, .210, .215, .224, .227, on both teams. To me, that's mediocre. It's not Claudio's opinion. It's there on the scoreboard. Now, to the Steelers. I think they have done an unbelievable job this offseason. I'm not going to go too crazy here, but their major draft 1,000 years ago when they had Stallworth and all those guys, I'm not saying it reminds me of that, but, boy, it may be just as impactful. They took care of this season and down the road. I think that they did a fantastic job. And let me say this. I'm not a Steeler fan. I'm just being very honest about it, and I'm telling you what I see. Some coaching staffs are good at developing, drafting and developing. Some are better with veterans. I'm hoping that the Steelers are going to be better with veterans because how come I saw my daughter was a color guard captain at Pitt, and we used to go to all the home games. When I saw Kenny Pickett, a sideline pass, and I could damn near read the serial numbers on the football. I said, if that was Dan Marino, go look at Dan Marino. There's a black and white video of Dan Marino and another quarterback. Marino has a T-shirt on and shorts. Look at his feet. Look at his release. Look at the bounce he had. Look at everything. I got sick and tired of hearing of all the intangibles and the swag. Oh, my God. I've never seen a Pittsburgh sports athlete more overblown and overrated than Kenny Pickett. Now, obviously, everybody is dumping on him, so on and so forth. And he has shown that he wasn't who everybody said he was. I never saw it. They joked about his hands. I was blessed with a very, very, very good arm, okay, throwing a baseball. Softball, I could still throw a softball pretty good. Football, no. My hands aren't big enough. Pickett was not accurate. Everybody wanted to blame Matt Canada. Canada wasn't that – I'm not saying he's a great play caller, but he couldn't have been that dumb. You mean to tell me he didn't have one play that was 35, 40 yards? And of course he did. He knew he didn't have the quarterback to do that. Like, I like to steal. I like to have my runners steal. But if I don't have guys who can run, okay, I got this one clown who he's in the stands. So they should run. They should steal. Well, hell, I know that. I don't have a guy who can steal. So what am I going to do? All right? So I think drafting Pickett was a huge mistake, number one especially. Number two, they got rid of him. Great. Wilson, I think, has something left. But if they decide to do, you know, put some plays in for Justin Fields, that never works. That never worked. Staubach, Craig Morton didn't work. You know, they would interchange. There was some other quarterbacks that they tried to do that with. Jaworski and Randall Cunningham, that didn't work. Keep Wilson in there. He still has a lot left. I don't think it's going to be a Namath Unitas type thing where, you know, it's their last legs. I still think Wilson has something left. Plus, he's probably playing for another contract. Let's just worry about this year. You do have Justin Fields, huge upgrade in quarterback. I think getting rid of Deontay Johnson was another guy who was a pain and didn't block and didn't want to do this and was extremely overrated and paid incredibly way, way too much, getting rid of him. So the Italians have a saying, an aching tooth is better out than in. They got rid of some teeth. Harvin's the punter, inconsistent. Okay, now getting Wilson, Fields, that punter they got, what was his last name, Johnson, I believe, Queen, great pickup. I just think they did an unbelievable job in getting the players that they got, impactful players. And now it's up to the coaching staff to do what they got to do. I told Steve the other day on our show, Italian Impact Weekly, I said, Steve, if you put me in a Ferrari, in an IndyCar race car, and you put Mario Andretti in a Ford truck, I have a feeling Mario Andretti's still going to beat me because I can't drive that IndyCar the way it should be driven. Hopefully, I've never been a Tomlin fan or any of his assistants, but hopefully they see what they have. And I think, I said this last year, and people thought it was crazy. I think Harris is an unbelievable back. I would use him. I'd throw some balls to him out of the backfield. I just think he's a stud and a half. They have some weapons. They had weapons last year, okay? But they do have some weapons, more weapons this year. They have a new attitude, I think. I think they jumped up considerably. I don't think Kansas City is a lock to win the Super Bowl. I just don't. And if somebody said to me, Claudio, I think the Steelers are going to win the Super Bowl this year. I know there's still some holes, which they can fill. I'm incredibly impressed with what they did this offseason. And if I say it, it's for real. Because like I said, some people, you know, they're fans, and I get that, and I respect that, and I can appreciate that. I'm just looking at it from an honest point of view. I think they've done an unbelievable job worrying about this coming season and worrying about the next couple of years. I think they've done fantastic.
Steve, what about you? Yeah, do you agree with Claudio there? Do you think they made the right moves in the offseason? Do you think Wilson has enough in the tank to make them competitive again? And, you know, what would you do with the upcoming draft here? I mean, knowing what they've kind of – some of the holes they've already filled, do you look at offensive line, you look at the receiver, you look at corner again? Where are you looking in the first couple of rounds?
I tell you what, I 100% agree with Claudio. I'm no Tomlin fan. I everybody says, well, he's never had a losing record, but he's got a lot of 8-8 seasons in there. And he hasn't won a playoff game in a long time, okay? And at the end of the day, the regular season stats are nice, but it's all about the playoffs. And so now I think they've got a better roster already. I do think that O-line is still suspect to me. And so you can have a great quarterback, but if he doesn't – and let's be honest, Russell Wilson is not the same Russell Wilson from, say, 8-10 years ago, okay? That doesn't mean – he's not a decent quarterback because I do think he's going to be way better than Kenny Pickett. I am still scratching my head why I wouldn't have gotten rid of Mason Rudolph so fast. I feel like he got a bad deal here because I think he wasn't a bad quarterback. Believe it or not, I don't even think Trubisky was a bad quarterback. I just think sometimes you're just not in the right system. Ironically enough, they went and picked up another Chicago quarterback. At least time, you know, let him be the backup then. Under Russell Wilson, a veteran who's been around here, Super Bowl champ, got it. I think that's an improvement in quarterback. One way or the other, having Russell Wilson is better than Kenny Pickett. And if Kenny Pickett came back, No matter what they tell you, he would have been the starter. Because you don't draft the number one, start him, and then put him back on the bench. And it wasn't going to happen. So I think getting Wilson here, better than Pickett. I'm not against who they picked up for the backup, but we'll see. You know, as far as where I'm going for drafts, I'm going for my O-line. Without an O-line, you don't have a run game. Without a run game, you don't have a passing game. That is as true now as it was 20 years ago. Because if teams know that you are a one-hit wonder, then they're going to play you against one hit. And so I think they ought to be looking at the O-line. I think defensively, they weren't bad last year. They just seemed to be inconsistent for some reason. Because they had some really shut-down games. And then they would have just a few games where their secondary just looked terrible. So maybe I'm looking in the secondary, but I think I'm looking at the O-line number one and secondary number two. I'm with Claudio. I think Najee Harris is great. I think they've got good receivers. I think they've upgraded on the quarterback. I think they've upgraded on the inside linebacker. They always seem to be solid on the outside linebacker. The defensive line, you know, how much time does You know, he's not a rookie anymore either. So, you know.
T.J. Watt.
I think overall, what's that?
T.J. Watt. You're looking for the name.
Yeah. No. Who's their center? Hayward. D-line.
Hayward.
Cam Hayward. Thank you. Woo. Yeah. So I think he is. You know, he's not young. I think you got to realize that he's not. He's got not much left in the tank. He's a good player, but you know, but when you have a guy like that in the middle, you know, that those are where I'm looking for my draft picks. I think I'm going for O-line. I'm looking for his replacement and maybe a secondary.
I think Steve is a zillion percent right. The offensive line, in my opinion, and the defensive line are two most important positions on the field because without that, your quarterbacks and your safeties, your linebackers are going to get burned. And offensive line, it helps your passing game, running game, and it helps with your defense because you control the offense even more. So Steve's a zillion percent right on that.
Well, gents, we're at the last couple of minutes here. Steve, I'll start with you. Just remind everybody how they can get a hold of you. And Claudio, just jump right in when Steve is done.
Oh, all right. Well, again, you can find me out on Facebook, Steve Mancini. And obviously, go out to our website, ItalianImpactWeekly.com. Claudio and I host a show there every week. I'm also filming a new documentary. You can go out, again, it'll be out on Facebook. You can go out to Steve Mancini Productions. It's going to send you to Italian Impact Weekly, but you can get a hold of me through any of my sites and through Facebook, LinkedIn, any social media. I'm out there, but feel free to reach out to me, and we'll definitely talk sports, whatever else you want to talk.
And you can get me at ClaudioRelsano.com. Even if you spell it wrong, somehow it'll come up, ClaudioRelsano.com, ItalianImpactWeekly.com. Facebook, and you can also get Steve on RW Media. Ralph's our boy, so Steve can be connected with Ralph, too.
Great. Well, Jim, thanks again for being our guest tonight. Oh, go ahead, Claudio.
No, I was just teasing Ralph. Teasing Ralph and Steve.
Well, you know, Ralph's listening. He always does. He's a good man.
I know he is. I got to mention Ralph.
Yeah. Well, gents, thanks for being on Draft Nation tonight. And thanks again to our sponsor, iHeartRadio, where you can find all your favorite music, radio, and podcasts all for free. And remember, while Draft Nation may be off the air, we are always on the clock for you. Steve, Claudio, thanks again for being our guests, and come back anytime.
Thank you for having us. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Claudio. We'll talk soon, buddies.
Thank you.
See you guys.